Tonight, I want to finish up a message that I've been getting through here. I think this is part four. Brother Shannon does the web and labels all these for us. But this is part four of a message that I've been preaching called The Urgency of Church Planting. And, you know, I've been talking about missions. Missions is something that we talk a lot about and we have talked about a lot traditionally here. All churches do missions differently, all right? A lot of churches, especially denominational churches, missions maybe doesn't get talked about a whole lot because they just take a certain percentage of the giving of the budget and they send it off to the denominational headquarters, or they send it off to some type of group type plan, and then that particular agency then distributes the funds to the missionaries. So the church itself doesn't have a lot of hands-on interaction with the missionaries, doesn't have a whole lot of knowledge about it. You know, you just give. Now here it's different because we don't have a set amount in our budget that goes to missions. What comes in for missions from our people is what we give to missions, and it's what ultimately goes out. So the way we budget our missions outreach is through the giving of the people. On our offering envelopes, there's a place for your grace giving that goes to the church to help support Crossroads and the ministries and all the different needs here. But then underneath grace giving, it says missions. And when you write $10 on that line, it goes into the missions account, you know, and then it goes out to missionaries. If you write $100, then $100 goes into the missions fund and then goes out to missions. And so that's the way we fund missions, is through the giving of our people that designate a certain amount of giving to missions. And that's how we do it. Missions, of course, is very, very important because it's so close to the heart of God. Jesus Christ came into the world to save sinners, and we know that we have a responsibility to proclaim the gospel throughout the world. We want to ultimately proclaim it throughout the world to every people group. And so we want to, as a local church, we want to do our part. Now, one of the things about the Apostle Paul, as we study him, and of course, he's the first real church planter that goes out for the purpose of preaching the gospel, organizing them into churches, and then turning it over to national leadership. As we study the life of Paul in the book of Acts, what's interesting to me is that he would go into an area, we would call it like a country, and he would go into that area, that province of the Roman Empire, and he would preach the gospel in certain key cities. He would get churches going in those cities, turn them over to national leadership, and then would consider, okay, my work's done there. I'm going to move on now to another province. And Paul, not that he never communicated with them, we know he wrote them letters. We know that he would occasionally visit them and check on them and strengthen them. But really, the bulk of his work was done because he had churches planted in those key cities. Now, it would be their responsibility to reach their area for Christ. And that's amazing. Paul really, you don't see the whole concept. You'll hear missionaries say, God's called me to this country, you know, and I'm going to go and I'm going to spend my life in that country. And I understand that. I don't know that I would call that necessarily God's calling. I may get in trouble for saying that maybe with some people, but I think that's their choice. And certainly, you know, you've heard me preach before, God draws the circle of His will, which is found in His Word, and then He gives us freedom and liberty to make choices within that circle. And if somebody says, I want to make a choice that I'm going to go to that country and spend my life, certainly they can make that choice. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But what we see with Paul is not that. What we see with Paul is Paul would go to an area, but then he would get some churches planted in key cities, and then he'd move on to another area. Then he'd move on to another area. And in a 10-year period, he had planted churches throughout the four major provinces of the Roman Empire and still had a desire to go into other areas that he had not been yet, you know, like Spain, he mentioned, and different areas he wanted to go, and he wanted to get churches going there and churches started. So, you know, this was Paul. Paul wanted to go where there was opportunity. What I'm trying to say is if a missionary were to come to our church and were to say to you, hey, you know what, I've got an opportunity here to go and I'm going to plant a church in this country and then I'm going to reevaluate where I'm at after 3 or 4 years, and that church is planted. I may go to another country. Is there anything wrong with that? Yes or no? No, that's what Paul did. There's nothing wrong with that at all. You know, and I know that's not as flashy, and maybe that's not is maybe it won't be received as well from people, but it's very biblical to have that attitude. I want to go where there's opportunity. I want to go where I can preach the gospel. I want to go where people have a freedom and a liberty to be able to preach the gospel there. And Paul would seize those opportunities. I've got a map here I'm going to bring up, and this is a map, if we could go ahead and do that. This is a map of Costa Rica, and I just chose a country randomly. Actually, I didn't even choose it. Brian did. My office, I said, just get a country, and I want you to put up some of the cities there, major cities, and so he chose Costa Rica. So here's Costa Rica, and, you know, if Paul were to go to Costa Rica and say, I want to reach that country with the gospel of Christ, what we see from Paul is Paul would probably go to this city over here, like Puerto Limon. Is that how you say it? Lemon? I don't know. Okay, so he'd go here to Puerto that, and he would start a church, okay? Get a church going. Then maybe go over here to a major city, San Jose. And then maybe go over here to this port city, Punta Arenas. And then maybe up here to Liberia, this city. And then if he got churches going in here, 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 and here, then he would consider his work done in that country. Because now they've got cities in some major areas where people travel, where people go for commerce, where people are coming and going. And those churches then, their responsibility would be to get the gospel out to the rest of that country. Paul may then move on to another country. And that's what we see Paul doing, and it certainly was effective. Now, we talked about how important it is that we get churches started quickly. You know, the idea that, hey, let's try to get the church planted in three years, 4 years, 5 years, not 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. Why? Well, we looked at several reasons, and Paul did not hesitate to say, okay, we've got a church here, we got converts, I've got some leaders trained, now it's yours, I'm moving on. And he didn't hesitate to do that. And he started churches very quickly. In a 10-year period, he started churches throughout the four provinces of the Roman Empire. And we talked about how that this idea of short-cycle church planting, you know, let's get in, let's get in there and let's get out, you know, because why? Well, we said, number one, the uncertainty of life. We don't know that we have 15 years. We don't know that we have 20 years to plant a church. We said things change, don't they? You know, and we said, number two, the imminent return of Christ. How many of you believe that Christ could return at any moment? You believe that? Well, we need to get the job done then. You know, we need to get going. You know, we talked about number three, the great need in the world. And I had people that said, man, what was that website? You know, that world-o-meter. And we put that up, and it showed in real time what was going on and the births and the deaths and how the population is growing at an enormous rate. And the evangelical church is not keeping pace. So every day we're falling further and further behind. Well, what are we going to do? Well, we got to get churches planted. We got to get them planted quickly. You know, we can't take our time. We got to get it done, all right? Now, I want to talk to you about a fourth thing tonight. We can go ahead and take that map down now. But number four is this. I think the fourth reason why we need to plant churches quickly is this idea of wise stewardship. Wise stewardship. Do you believe that when you give to missions, do you believe that when you give money to the work of God, do you believe that's money wasted, or do you believe it's an investment? I think most of us give our money believing that it's an investment. And we believe we give as an investment, believing there'll be eternal fruit to show for our investment. Is that a valid scriptural concept? It is. Go to Philippians chapter 4 and let me show you this. Philippians chapter 4. All right, let's look at verse 15, Philippians 4:15. Philippians, Paul is writing back to a church he started, the church at Philippi. He started this church, and in Philippians 4:15, he says, "Now you Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church communicated with me as concerning giving and receiving, but ye only." Paul had one supporting church. This is why you see Paul working, tent making, you know, and doing things, because he did not have, you know, monthly support like missionaries do today. He didn't have that. He said, "I had one church, and that was you." Look at verse 16. "For even in Thessalonica, ye sent once and again unto my necessity." Now look at verse 17. "Not because I desire a gift, but I desire" what? "Fruit that may abound to," say it with me, "your account." The believers at Philippi, that local church like Crossroads, they had given to the Apostle Paul's missionary work. And that investment in Paul would then produce fruit that would abound to their heavenly account. What is an investment? Well, I looked it up in Webster's. And here's how Webster's Online defines the word investment. Listen closely, because we're going to apply this to the idea of investing in missions or the work of God with our money. Listen to the definition of investment. "The process of exchanging income for an asset that is expected to produce earnings at a later time." Investment. "The process of exchanging income for an asset that's expected to produce earnings at a later time." In other words, an investment expects and in fact requires a return. It looks for results. For lack of a better term, I'll just say it bluntly. An investment looks for results. So let's apply that to our giving. If you invest in missions, or if you invest money in your local church, do you have every right to expect to see a legitimate return on your investment? Yes or no? Yes. Namely what? What kind of a return would we want with our giving? Well, souls saved, people being discipled, trained, and equipped in the Word of God, and if we're giving to missions, We have every right to expect to see churches planted, because that's really what missions is biblically. It's seeing churches established. So, you know, you take, for example, Crossroads. You can see the return on your investment. You say, "How? Well, you know, I think about what, you know, we had a 3-week period we just came out of where we had about 15 precious souls that got saved. Isn't that a blessing? Amen." You know, and you give and you get to see that and you rejoice. You say, "Man, I'm giving and it's abounding to my account in heaven." You know, I think about our staff here. We've got about a dozen staff members, don't we, Brother Shannon? And every single one of them has been homegrown here at Crossroads. Isn't that exciting? You know, a lot of churches, they hire people in, you know, and they hire one person in from here and another person, and there's nothing wrong with that, nothing sinful about that. You know, but isn't it exciting to have a church where the Bible, the gospel's being preached, people are being saved, people are being discipled, and now those people are becoming leaders, and the leaders of this ministry are peoples whose lives have been changed by this ministry. That's exciting. We're seeing fruit from our giving. I mean, I look around the table. Monday morning, we have a staff meeting with all of our staff in one room at one time. And, well, it seems like usually someone's missing, you know, sickness or somebody's gone or out of town. But, you know, we try to get everybody together Monday morning for a unified staff meeting. It's just exciting to me. And I mentioned it a few weeks ago. It's so exciting to see all of you whose lives have been touched and changed by Christ, but through the ministry here at Crossroads. It's exciting, you know, just to know we've all been homegrown, you know, right here. People who have been saved or discipled right here. You know, this year, in a couple of weeks, we'll have our Bible conference. I'm so excited about that. And we got so many cool things planned for the Bible conference. We're going to have dinners Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I got so many things planned for the conference and the services and singing. And you know, I was asking Pastor Rich before the service. I said, how many graduates do we have that have gone through all 3 years of Bible training? We've got 7 more graduates this year who are going to be walking this platform that have finished the course. Isn't that great? That's exciting. That brings our total up, and our Bible Institute is not that old, but it brings our total up to like 30 to 35 people in the last few years that have gone through the program and finished it and completed it and finished the course. That's exciting. What am I saying? Man, when you give to a ministry, you want to know that it is an investment and that it is abounding to my account. If there's no fruit, then my investment is, it doesn't abound in my account because there's no fruit, you know? But Paul knew he was bearing fruit. He knew souls were being saved, lives were being changed, people were being discipled, churches were being planted. And so he tells the church at Philippi, man, you gave to me sacrificially, but I want you to know it was an investment. It's an abounding to your account in heaven. You know, but if there's no fruit, well, then it's not a real good investment, is it? See? And so that's why who we support in our missions is important. You know, who we're giving money to every month is important. You know, because it's an investment. And hey, if you own a business, some of you in here own a business or you've owned a business. If you own a business, is it enough for a person to just show up for work every day? Is that enough? No. Usually that's not enough. You know, are there expectations for that worker, yes or no? Certainly, absolutely. Every one of our staff have a job description. And they know that's the expectation. And they know they're going to be held accountable for that. You know, if the person that, say you own a business, and the person is not showing any results from their work that you're looking for, they're not manifesting any results from the work that you're looking for them to produce. You know what? It's not a question of their heart. It's not a question of their motive. It's not a question of their sincerity. But you have every right to question their strategy and their methods. Why? Well, because you're making an investment in them by paying them each week. Brother Jim just retired from Publix after 30-something years. Is that correct? 30-something years? And store manager, district manager. And hey, when you were a district manager over a lot of other managers, did you have expectations from them, or was it just enough to show up? High expectations, he said. And if they weren't meeting the expectations, you had a little talk with them, didn't you? Yeah. And you reviewed. You weren't judging their heart or their motives, but you were saying, hey, we're not getting the results we want, so we need to talk about your strategies. We need to talk about your methodology. How are you going about business here? Because it's not working. If Brother Shannon, if someone out there is serving in Walk Through Bethlehem Construction, and they're using a hammer to try to drive a screw in a wall, which is like something I would do, all right? You don't question their sincerity, do you? You don't go up and say, man, you're insincere, do you? No, no. You don't question their faithfulness, do you? Man, you're glad they're there. But you have every right to say, hey, man, your method's not working. It's not efficient, and you really need to change. You got every right to say that. If a person is not getting the desired results with their current approach, well, then the solution is obvious. What? Right. Change your approach. Yeah, if you're not getting the desired results with your current approach, let's talk about changing your approach. Now, how does this apply to missions? Well, the goal of missions, biblically, if Paul is our model, now, I believe that he is. I believe Paul said he's our pattern. I believe there's a reason why God chose to trace Paul's travels beginning in Acts 13 and basically spend the whole rest of the book of Acts chronicling his life and ministry. So I don't think that's an accident. You know, Peter fades away, the 12 fade away, and Paul dominates the scene from Acts 13 to 28, and then the next 13 books are his. So I think there's a reason why. So I believe biblically when it comes to missions, when it comes to church planting, Paul needs to be our model. There's no doubt about that. And certainly he got the desired results. I mean, we see him planting churches all over the place, getting people trained, discipled in the way of Christ, winning souls to Christ. So if Paul's our model, and again, there are churches that wouldn't hold to that. That's their privilege. They can do whatever they want. And they can take whatever approach and strategy they want to. Every local church can do that. But if our local church is convinced that Paul is our model, and I believe that he is, then certainly what is the goal of missions if Paul's my model? Well, the goal is win souls to Christ. Can I get an amen, huh? All right, number two is you want to disciple and equip new converts. I called it 2 Timothy 2:2 in it, right? You take those things, you commit them to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. So the goal of missions is to win souls to Christ, disciple and equip those new converts, and then get that church planted and get out of there. You're not on the mission field to just pastor a church. You're a missionary. You're not a pastor. You're a missionary. You are there on a mission. A missionary is somebody on a mission. They are there to get souls saved, get people trained, turn it over to that national leadership, believing they're better equipped than you are to reach that country, and you get out of there and go repeat the process somewhere else. See, that's the goal of missions. Each missionary that a church supports is an extension of that local church. In essence, they're like a staff member, in the sense that that missionary is receiving remuneration on a consistent basis so they can in turn accomplish the work of the ministry without having to worry about, you know, how they're going to keep a roof over their head and food on the table. So they're receiving that remuneration so they can focus on, namely, getting souls saved, getting people trained, getting the church planted. So they're like a staff member of the church. As such, there must be accountability. If a missionary is being supported, and I'm throwing out literally a random figure. Some missionaries, it would be more, some less than this. I'm just throwing out a round figure. Let's just say that a missionary is being supported $50,000 a year from Western churches. He's gone on deputation. He's got, you know, churches giving him money each month. And when you add it up, it's $50,000 a year. Those churches that are supporting that missionary have a right and they have a responsibility to ask questions like, how are you doing? Are souls being saved? Are converts being discipled? What's your discipleship strategy? What are your goals? What's your timeline for getting this church planted? What are your goals? What methods and what strategies do you have for achieving those goals? You know, asking questions like, hey, is there leadership there in your church that you're currently training? Is there anyone that you're trying to equip to take that thing so you can get out of there? How are you progressing in preparing the flock to be led by a national pastor? To be led by a national leadership? Are you preparing them? Are you equipping them for that? Do they know you're there temporarily? Do they know that your goal is to get the church going and get out? What's your exit strategy? What's your timeline for achieving it? These are all questions that churches really need, they shouldn't have to ask. The missionaries should just tell them. But, you know, if they don't, then you ask. Why? Accountability. Because remember, giving to missions is an investment. And remember, an investment always looks for a return on that investment. Therefore, the churches have a right to ask, and givers have a right to ask, am I gaining the return on my investment that I desire here? Maybe not. Okay? And it may be that it doesn't mean the missionary's wrong. It doesn't necessarily mean that missionary is sinful. It may just simply mean that the missionary over here and then this church over here that's supporting him, maybe they've got different ministry philosophies. They've got different ministry goals. It's just not a good partnership. Nobody's wrong. You know, they're just simply looking for different goals to be met. Is accountability a scriptural concept, church? What exactly is accountability? Well, here's what it is. It is submitting yourself to the spiritual authority of another person for the purpose of spiritual growth and development in your life. The idea of accountability is, of course, not popular in the world today. Very few people want to be told that they are accountable and that they're going to be held responsible for their own attitudes and for their own actions. That's not a popular concept, but yet, as I said, any business that's worth its salt out there today practices that. And that's like I gave the illustration of Brother Jim. He has to hold those managers accountable. And then the managers have to hold their employees accountable. You know, you have to have that. And God knows that too. In the spiritual realm, it's the same way. You got to have it. In December of this last year, the very first of December, the end of November, Brian and I, we formed just a simple 4 or 5 questionnaire to our missionaries. And we don't do that every year. It'd probably been, what, four years since we'd done that. But it was a simple 4 or 5 questionnaire with questions on there about their ministry. Hey, tell us, what are the blessings from this past year? What fruit is there? You know, hey, what are your goals for this coming year? What are your goals? You know, are you seeking to plant a church? How long you been trying to plant it? You know, when, what's your exit strategy? That kind of thing. Just 4 or 5 questions. The answers were interesting. A lot of them were very thankful for the accountability and the interest. Because to be quite frank with you, according to what missionaries have told me, most of their churches don't communicate with them, period. And they don't act like they're even interested. I've had so many missionaries tell me, we just can't believe we come to your church and people ask us about our ministry. They ask us how we're doing. I can't tell you how many times they've bragged on you guys about just your interest. They said, man, we go to churches and the pastor isn't interested. You know, he's just not interested in how things are going. And so many of them were thankful for that accountability, that interest. Some, there was subtle resistance. Some just ignored it. Just no response. Through the years, I've had some just flat out say, I'm not doing it. Take your support, leave. I don't care. I'm not filling out any questionnaire. You know what? Here's the deal, and that's rare. If your livelihood is being provided for by churches in the West, do you think they have a legitimate right to know what's going on? Yeah. Jesus practiced the principle of accountability with his disciples. Jesus trained his disciples, he equipped them, he sent them out, and then he had them report back. Why? Because he knew that would motivate them to accomplish all of God's will. Jesus used accountability not to instill fear in his followers, but he used accountability as a catalyst to bring growth and to bring fruit in the lives of his disciples. He said, the Father's glorified when you bear much fruit. There ought to be some fruit. And he said, the Father's glorified when you bear fruit. And so his goal was for the disciples to bear fruit. And so he held them accountable so they could do that. He constantly emphasized the importance of accountability as he prepared Israel for their future kingdom. I'll just give you an example real quickly. Go to Matthew 25. Flip over there with me. Matthew chapter 25. Let's turn real fast because I've got to talk fast, all right? Matthew, I don't want this to be a 5-parter, all right? Matthew 25. All right, look at verse 14. Matthew 25, 14. For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Verse 16. Then he that had received the five talents went and traded with the same and made them other five talents. He doubled it. Likewise, he that received two, he also gained other two. So, man, this was a good investment in these guys. Verse 18, but he that received one went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with them. And then it goes on to say how he commends the one that multiplied the five and the two. For time's sake, let's go on down. Verse 24, then he which had received the one talent came and said, Lord, I knew that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid. And I went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast that is thine. His Lord answered and said unto him, thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not and gather where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers. And then at thy coming, I should have received mine own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him and give it unto him which hath 10 talents. For unto every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, this is a kingdom parable, keep in mind. All right, it's not written to the church. But what I'm trying to show you is that Jesus taught the idea of accountability. Go to Luke 16. All right, Luke chapter 16. In Luke 16, in verse number 1, it says, and he said also unto his disciples, there was a certain rich man which had a steward. And the same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods. So this steward, he said, was wasteful. Verse 2, and he called him and said unto him, how is it that I hear this of thee? Give an, and what's the next word? Give an account of thy stewardship, for thou mayest be no longer steward. Then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my Lord taketh away from me the stewardship. I cannot dig to beg. I'm ashamed. I'm resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. So he called every one of his Lord's debtors unto him and said unto the first, how much owest thou unto my Lord? He said, 100 measures of oil. He said unto him, take thy bill, sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, how much owest thou? He said, 100 measures of wheat. He said unto him, take thy bill, write 80. And the Lord commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely. For the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. And I say unto you, make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when ye fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations. He that is faithful in that which is least, he said, is faithful also in much. He that is unjust in the least, he said, you know what? Doesn't matter how much you give him, he's going to be unjust also in much. You see, everybody needs accountability. Paul taught the need for accountability throughout his epistles. I think it could be summarized in Ephesians 5:21, where he said, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. The word submit means to arrange under or to obey. I like to liken accountability to train tracks. The tracks are there so that the train doesn't what? Why are there train tracks? It's so the train doesn't get off course. God desires for us to have accountability in our lives to provide us with loving direction like those train tracks. Because if not, we can get off track and lose direction. Many times I think we make it difficult for our missionaries to succeed by virtue of the system that we have in place in our missions programs across America. There aren't solid train tracks in place. And this isn't just me saying this. I have a missionary I read recently that we support. And I think I brought it with me. Let me see if I've got it here. He wrote, I don't have it. Boy, that's aggravating. I'm forgiven. Thank you. All right. Well, I'll give you the gist of it. This missionary wrote the idea that the key to missions, he said, is accountability. And he talked about the fact that so many churches in the States, he said, there's no accountability for the missionary. He said, questions are not asked. He said questions ought to be asked of the missionary. And some of the questions I quoted earlier are the same questions that he said ought to be asked. What are your goals? What's your direction? What's your plans? How are you doing? How are you doing personally? You know? And I was thinking about that, and I thought, you know, he's right. This is a missionary that's out there doing it, and he's like screaming, yes, we need this accountability. You know, I thought, yeah, you know, because here at our church at Crossroads, you think about it. Our pastors, including myself, we're accountable. We have fellow pastors that hold us accountable. Deacons, treasurers. We've got policy manuals that we're held accountable to. Church budgets that the church has basically said, this is the parameter and we have to stay in it. We have a church constitution and bylaws that we have to abide by. We have fellow staff members that hold us accountable, church members to hold us accountable if they see us going off track. In other words, there's train tracks. Now, can a person stray? Well, sure. But it's going to be evident, most likely. If they stray too far, the whistles are going to be blown. What does a missionary have? We send a missionary to a foreign field, all by themselves, usually, which we'll talk about that later, the idea that Paul always had a team concept with missions. He wasn't a lone ranger. Well, even he had Tano, didn't he? But we send a missionary a lot of times off to a foreign field all by themselves with basically no authority, no accountability. They send an email prayer letter once every 3 months with whatever information they want to say and include. Churches in the States, unfortunately, rarely read the letters. Pastors and staff rarely read the letters. So many times, and by the way, I can't tell you how many times I've called a missionary's mission board because I had questions. They're clueless. And I've had the missionaries themselves tell me the mission board's clueless. They don't have a clue what I'm doing over here. And imagine running your business that way. Imagine running your business that way. Imagine that you send an employee off all by themselves. Brother Jim, you send a manager. Brother Paul, you send a teacher into a class, and you send them off all by themselves, and you tell the employee, hey, just let me know how it's going every 3 months. You know, I mean, how many employees do you do that to? You just turn them loose and see you, and then you don't talk to them, you don't see them for 3 months, and just, hey, let me know how it's going every 3 months. And what happens is, We set them up to fail. If a missionary comes to a church, they've got a slick presentation. Churches will take them on for basically lifetime support. And I can't tell you, missionaries have told me this. A church will take them on for support every month and basically never communicate with them again for years. They're just writing them a check every month. There's no accountability. As long as they're on the field, as long as they stay on the field, the churches just keep sending the money each month with little awareness as to, okay, what are the goals? Let alone, are the goals being met? And when it comes to God's work, I'm afraid that many times we're guilty of, we place value on faithfulness and perseverance, which we should. There is value in that. But many times we place value on faithfulness and perseverance, but we pay little attention to actual results. What if a missionary, and I had a pastor tell me recently this, and I thought that's interesting, and that's worth thinking about, is that he takes missionaries on at his church for a four-year obligation. And then at 4 years, we review. We see, okay, are the goals being met? Is the church being established? Did you get it planted? If you didn't get the church planted in 4 years, why? Were there extenuating circumstances? And then we may renew for another 4 years. depending on what's going on. It's just like anything else, you know. You don't maintain being an employee somewhere just because you show up for work every day. There's goals, you know. There's strategies you have to look at, and are you meeting those goals? What's my point? Here's my point. I'm going to summarize this. When Paul was sent out to preach the gospel, there were converts, there were people discipled, and there were churches planted. And if we're investing in God's work, if we're investing in the work of God, if we're investing in missions, but due to a lack of planning or due to maybe faulty methodology, souls are not really being saved. People are not being discipled. Leadership's not being trained. Churches are not being planted. Then my point is this: there will not be a reward on our investment. You see, the reward, that fruit that Paul talked about that abounds to your account, it won't be there. So our ministry strategy must involve strategies to plant churches faster, get it done, and then get out and believe those nationals are better equipped to reach their area and their country than you are. And constantly evaluate our methods. Why? Why do all that? Why bother? Why not just write a check every month and forget about it? Why? Well, remember, it's so that we can be wise stewards, so that we can get the most return on our investment, so that we can see more souls saved. It's called wise stewardship. And I would encourage you, those of you who have not done this, I would encourage you, don't be ignorant. If you're giving to missions every month, that's an investment. You ought to know, okay, well, what's the return on that investment? And I want to really exhort you. Maybe some of you are doing this, but go on crbible.com, our website. Go to the link that says missions. And there you can see the most recent letters from the missionaries. Read them, study them, know who the missionaries are. Know who's getting the job done, who's planting churches, who's seeing souls saved, who's talking about leadership they're training. And then you'll read other letters maybe and think, feel free to bring that up. Feel free to mention it to me or any of the pastors. Hey, I read 6 letters from this guy. What's going on? Man, that would be music to my ears to hear that. You know, that's not going to bother me a bit. We all, listen, it's not just my job, it's all of ours job, isn't it? I mean, if we're giving to missions, we need to know what's going on. And the bottom line is we want to see an investment on that return. We want to see souls saved, people discipled, churches planted. Amen, church? That's how we reach our world with the gospel.